Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Welcome to another edition of Amp Radio. Boy, that didn't go well. I don't know what the hell happened there. Let's do this one more time. Take two. Good Lord, I was doing the MMA minutes.
Are you ready?
Welcome to another edition of Amp Radio, another MMA podcast. We're coming at you live and unedited from the mean streets of San Mateo, California, and Proteus. I think I need some caffeine here, some coffee. Good Lord. I went straight into the MMA minute, and that's not good. Now let's meet our host, fighting out of the red corner, the Maple Leaf himself, the man who may have a date set for Toronto, Proteus.
Good morning, Tony. It's nice to be with you here again on our Sunday morning and my Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, don't you just love how I fell asleep early? Good Lord, what the heck happened there? I went straight into the MMA minute. I got to tell you, Pro, one of the strangest fight cards that I've seen to date is UFC 203. I mean, with
that's
you know,
for
with
sure.
The funny thing is, though, I think everybody was yelling Goza's kick his ass, Seabass thing when Verdum went after Edmund. What are your initial thoughts on UFC 203?
Yeah, the craziest thing, the craziest card I've ever seen. I was on the live tweeting last night, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, let's start from the beginning with Ryan Bader and his elevator incident, and then you take us all the way up to, you know, Travis Brown and his weird finger incident, and then on top of that, a brawl almost breaking out inside the octagon after the fight. Just craziness, just absolute lunacy last night.
Do we have any news on what officially happened? Because obviously Dolloway was out of that fight. What exactly did happen with the whole elevator incident? Does anyone really know?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see exactly what had happened with CB, but I did hear that one of the cutmen also got trapped in an elevator, or something happened with the elevator with him as well. So watch out for Cleveland elevators, guys.
Well, apparently it might have been a thing of weight, right? It says CB Dolloway won't be able to fight tonight at UFC because he was injured while riding a faulty elevator. Was it faulty, or was the fact that you had a bunch of grown men that are most of them in tremendous shape? I mean, these are 200 pounders for the most part, right? I mean, how many were there?
Yeah, from the looks of what I saw with the cut man getting off of it, just a quick picture that I saw of it, it was a fairly old, shoddy kind of elevator. So that's probably what happened. Yeah, it's probably a weight thing.
A Wyndham Hotel representative. I guess the mistake at the lake continues to happen at the land. But, you know, heck, listen, a lot of things obviously happened. I didn't actually get to watch a lot of the prelims. I watched everything that was televised. Or was there something on Fight Pass? I actually don't know, because if there was something on Fight Pass, I didn't get to see it.
Yes, there was. I believe there were two fights on Fight Pass. I didn't get to see them either. To be honest with you, I started at the Ai Kohea fight, and I didn't see anything before that. So,
Go ahead, bro.
I was just stuttering.
I saw the heck, don't we all? Especially at this time in the morning, and I need caffeine. That's for damn sure. I saw everything in the prelim card, you know, the Dober versus Gonzalez. Gonzalez obviously tends to have a certain ring for us because he is an RFA guy. Obviously clearly left RFA for the UFC. I think he was the 40th RFA fighter to have joined the UFC. The Nick Lentz McBride fight. I saw that. I actually thought that was pretty competitive. Kind of fell asleep during the Tavares-Malga-Hayes fight. Didn't really think that was that. Right? I mean, it was pretty... I'll tell you where I really fell asleep, and this is going to surprise you here, bro. It's going to surprise most people, because you know me, how I love the women. And obviously, I was really looking forward to the Jessica...
I.
Thank you. The Jessica I fight versus Vetch-Kohea, and what a stinker of a fight there. I mean... Jessica I, for the last, ever since probably the second round of the Misha fight, I don't know where her head's been, but clearly, right. You know, they talk about fight IQ level pro not being, you know, the greatest there. Is she holding back way too much? I mean, is this something that's all in her head, or what's going on there?
To be honest with you, Tony, I had a completely different view of this fight. What impressed me most was Ai's boxing. I thought she was on point, especially when she came out in the first. She was really starting to light up Kohea, and you know, she was mixing in those leg kicks on the front leg, and going to the body too. She was going to the body really well. Maybe you thought it was a stinker because it was a very close fight, and I didn't agree with the decision. I thought even though I picked Kohea in our picks, I thought I did enough to win that fight. Not only that, but I thought, you know, with her boxing and stuff, but I thought that, you know, I was using her front kicks really, really well to keep the distance and to, you know, she'd front kick and then she would circle out away from Kohea's power. And I thought she did a real good job there. But, you know, it just goes to show you, two different people watching one fight can have two different opinions.
The eyes have it, right? Hello? Where's the rim shot there? Yeah. You know, it's funny because you were seeing it through through we all see things, right? Through our own set of eyes. Nothing. Thank you. All right. But just listen, I've been kickboxing here and there on and off for gosh, going on 10 years, and I probably look worse than CM Punk's first day, right? I'm that horrible. But I gotta be honest with you. Looking at her, she's holding back. She was doing that Mariana Moroz, you know, like like Heather was saying, right? Punching at air type of thing.
Yeah.
She was holding back. You know, she always fights kind of stiff. It was interesting. She was using kicks, and you're right about that, because Jessica I is not one to use kicks. So it was interesting there.
Right.
But if you see the aggressiveness and just the movement, her head movement was pretty good. And actually, Jessica I has better head movement. Wasn't doing that. Hold on. That sounds wrong, right? Hold on. Jessica I has better head movement. Sorry. All right.
God.
But I know, and this is me without caffeine. Hello. All right, but if you look at it, just the whole thing, she's tentative. She wasn't putting a lot together. She kept getting hit in the face. And I don't think that Betch is that great of a fighter. I mean, this was both of them got into it for different reasons, to get in shape. Jessica I, after, I believe, a car accident. Betch was an accountant in Brazil when she got into it. So shout out to all the accountants, right? But I just don't think that, now here's the interesting part, because a lot of people were talking about this. So did she do enough to stay on the UFC roster, or is it all hail Bellator at this point?
Before we move into that real quickly, I want to touch on what you were talking about just earlier with the way I was reacting and how she was fighting. The way I saw that is that Betch really was trying to initiate in the clinch and, you know, use her big power. And I was able to stay away from that. And I think that was part of the game plan. I think that was what they wanted to do. They wanted to stay out of the clinch, because every time there was like almost a clinch, I was out of there. She didn't get trapped inside that clinch with Betch, which is probably a good idea, because Betch, not only, well, is a much bigger girl. She looks a lot bigger than I did in the octagon last night. And you know, that's why I think that we saw the fight that we saw. It was very tactical. She was trying to stay away from that power. And with your second question, is she done in the UFC and is she moving on to either Invicta or Bellator? I don't think so, man. I think that she showed enough improvement in this fight. I don't know if it was just because of the whole Cleveland bump, you know, that she's fighting in her hometown and she was pumped up for that. I think she gets another one, to be honest with you. And I know I was on the other side of the fence on the pick show, on the Smack My Picks Up and on my my primetime show on Thursday. But I think that she did enough. Thanks. I think she did enough. I think she looked all right. I mean, who do you give her next? I don't know. Maybe someone to make her look good. Maybe. But we'll see, right? I mean, that division could use her. So I think that's where she's at. I think she gets another fight.
You know, that's the funny thing. Okay, so you talk about Jessica Eye looking a little bit smaller. Height-wise, I think she's an inch or two. And mind you, you can never go off the stated height, right? But she's listed at 5'6". I'm pretty sure her walk-around weight is over 150 because she's not a small girl, right? Betch is probably – she's listed as 5'5". I don't think she's 5'5". Maybe she's 5'3". Clearly, she has a lot more junk in her trunk. And But, you know,
she has that Brazilian look to her, yes.
Well, and in some ways not that great either. But if you look at Betch is 3 years older, hasn't had the fights that Jessica Eye has had. Jessica Eye, I think, is a better fighter, maybe a better physical specimen. But at the end of the day, pro, you know, if you look at, you know, how many times does this happen in professional sports, right? Where, you know, $1 million body, you know, sometimes a 10-cent head. I'm not saying that's the case with Jessica Eye, but there definitely seems to be a little bit of a fight IQ issue. I don't know if sometimes she just gets her in her own way, but she should be on paper the better fighter. And
right.
I don't see how she's, you know, everyone talks about her being at the 125 weight class. I think she would struggle to make 125 because if you see her just not while she's training in her cooking videos, et cetera, she's not a small girl, bro. I mean, she's
right.
She's a very attractive woman and in great, in good shape for a normal person. But as a fighter, I think she struggles to make 135. And I think she weighed in 136, right? Or 135 and a half. So it's not like she's clearing it by a mile. She's just barely making that weight class. So it was interesting. Split decision. I don't think it was a robbery by any stretch of the imagination. Someone put maybe a pickpocket. But was surprised that she lost it just because she was in Cleveland. But by the same token, pro, she didn't win it outright.
No, she definitely did not win it outright. But And I think what we saw here was, you know, more of a fact that Betch was moving forward a lot more. I was very surprised with the split decision going towards Betch. Like I stated earlier, I was very surprised. I thought for sure Jessica did enough. I mean, but I'm not a judge. I've got nothing to do with it. Is it a robbery? I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a robbery. It was a close fight, and I just saw it going the other way. And to be honest with you, the crazy celebration that Betch had at the end of the fight, just as the bell rang, as if she had won a landslide fight. You know what I mean? Like, it's for sure my fight. No, I said to my wife, I turned to my wife and said, what the hell is this? You know, she's dancing like she just won the world. But anyways, I digress.
Betch was acting a little, you know, smack my Betch up, right? But Betch was acting a little odd the entire time. I mean, you know, I think she's relatively a nice person. Who the heck knows? None of us have either spoken to her. But if you look at her, even in the weigh-ins, when everyone was booing, clearly she was in a hostile environment. She had lost two straight, bro. So getting knocked out, of course, by Honda Housie, and then, of course, losing a relatively close decision to Raquel Pennington. I actually thought Betch had a good argument that maybe it would have gone her way, but I don't think I don't think Kohea, or rather I, did enough in the beginning. In round one, I think she was hesitant. Round two, what I remember is Kohea throwing some kicks early, landing some jabs and some hooks. You know, I, to me, was taking a lot of shots to the face, to be frank. So it was, to me, on paper, Jessica is the more talented fighter, but she struggled, guys. I mean, she has really struggled with higher, you know, she struggled all the way across, not just, I was going to say with higher level competition, but she struggled recently with non-four horse woman people. And maybe, you know, maybe there you go, pro. Maybe that is the higher level competition, non-four horse woman. But, the only KO she had was Baszler, and then she KO'd D'Souza. Everything else has been a decision. So she's used to going three rounds. Hey, kudos to Betch, right, for being weird and getting that victory. Bro, let's go to the women's strawweight. We go Jessica Andrade versus, you know, the by herself. Joanne Calderwood, I didn't. Sorry, I'm doing the whole cold coffee there impression. But,
yeah, that's Kenny's,
so shout out
that's
to
Kenny's
coffee,
thing.
By the way, right, Kenny. But boy, I called this one. I said Andrade was going to put her in, submit her, and only because I've seen, you know, this is another case of pro, I think, of someone that's really talented that sometimes doesn't have her head in the game. But Andrade, since moving down in weight, and, you know, talk about a small woman, she is really talented and does have some good striking, great, pretty good BJJ. I just didn't see Calderwood winning on this one.
Yeah. And I remember you saying that. And if you remember what I said on Thursday, too, is that if JoJo can get out of the first and stay away from the barrage that is Andrade. Wow, I'm a poet. And,
and you didn't even know it.
I didn't know that. And then she would have a chance. And she didn't. She got dominated from start to finish. There was no – she was not in this fight at all. Just got totally smashed by Andrade. And like we were saying on Wednesday, smack my picks up, I think that JoJo should be at 125. Andrade being a small girl, like height-wise, she is not a small girl. Though she's got some arms on her. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at them, but they're gigantic. You know, her arms are like twice the size of mine, as they should be, I guess, because I don't work out at all. But she's huge. Yeah, that's all I could think last night is, look at the size of her. And I was wondering a little bit to myself whether or not that Mexican supplements may have been involved in this. But I'm not throwing any shade. We'll see what happens when the tests come back. But, yeah, she's a big girl and very talented, of course, vicious.
Nate Diaz would say.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Who the heck knows when it comes to those kangaroo meats and whatever else is coming our way. Let's give James James Lynch, of course, had a long night, but he's up and ready, and he has interviews after after the podcast. So let's go ahead and give him a call.
Okay. Yes, let's get into it. Yeah.
Gentlemen, how's it going?
Gentlemen, we are blessed to have the one and only James Lynch. James, as Proteus was telling us, boy, you had a long night. Follow him at, of course, Lynch on Sports. James Lynch, of course, MMA journalist for Sportsnet. Boy, a lot of things. MMA odds breakers. That's what I think Proteus saw you on last night. Our very own, of course, Flow Combat with Bo, and host of the Parting Shot MMA, which I always watch, actually. That's on YouTube, right, James?
Yeah, we have two shows. We have, like, the actual podcast, and then we have, you know, I do the one-on-one show where I talk to fighters, and it's just it's a video show. So, yeah, you're correct.
James, the one thing that I always like about you is, you know, this game in broadcasting, what's the first thing they tell you to do, right? always talk like you're smiling. Always hold a mirror in front of you. So if you're smiling in the mirror, you're smiling on the radio, and that's what you always do. You're always smiling, and it always shows. So welcome to Amp Radio, and good morning to you, my friend.
Thank you. Glad to be on Amp Radio. I love what you guys are doing, and like I said, I really appreciate the opportunity to be on here with you guys.
Well, thanks very much. I'm going to go ahead and get this most important of questions out of the way first. This is Proteus with you, by the way, James.
Perfect.
So you're working there at the Rogers campus, I assume, correct?
No. So a lot of people kind of get confused. I have like a regular 9-to-5 job, like outside of my MMA stuff. So the stuff I do for Sportsnet, that's just on like a freelance thing. So I don't even work in the office there. I just submit articles to them and just sort of work from home type thing when I do all my MMA stuff. So, but yeah, I'm very familiar with the Rogers campus because I actually work for Rogers in my regular job, which is kind of interesting. So it kind of all ties together.
Right, right. So my question is Sid 6-0 really as hairy as a Bigfoot?
Yeah, you know, he does seem to pack a punch. You know, it's funny with Sid. Actually, the first media job I ever got was I was a script writer for the now defunct Score Tonight show. If you remember in
right.
Canada, they had a third network called The Score. They used to show a lot of MMA on there. And I was actually a script writer for Tim and Sid when they were on that show, The Score Tonight. So I actually got to meet Sid way back in 2008. So he's a really nice guy. But yes, definitely packs a punch with the hair.
Yeah, I'm Canadian. I'm located in Brantford, Ontario, so I'm very close to you. So I'm familiar with The Score. And for all you Americans or people who don't know who Sid 6-0 is, he does run a show up here in Canada on Sportsnet. He's a host of The Tim and Sid Show. So my second question is, do you sleep, sir? Because after the fights last night, all I want in the press conference, all I wanted to do was go to sleep. And I wake up this morning and you've got a whole show. A whole hour show, a breakdown show, right after the fights. Do you actually sleep?
I do. You just have to, you know, I nap a lot. That's sort of the way I kind of keep things sane. But no, we decided last night, you know, normally when we do the podcast, we do it at, you know, Sunday morning. We record it. It's not a video show. But just lately, just with our schedules, my co-host and I, because my co-host, Carlin Bardsley, he lives all the way out in Taiwan. So it's a 12-hour time difference.
Right.
Sometimes it's difficult for us to get guests on the show. So this week we didn't have any guests. So we're like, let's just do a live show. We'll break it down. And so I didn't mind at all. You know, I was kind of wired from last night, especially seeing what was happening at UFC 203. So it wasn't a problem at all. Got to sleep, got a couple hours, and then got up and ready to do it here, you know. So it's, you know, it's just the way it is.
Hey, James, before we get into the strange card that was UFC 203, I got to ask you, you know, we always want to get to know our guests and more importantly, get to know how you got into this crazy barbaric sport, right, which is, you know, MMA. But talk to me about your journey into MMA.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to sit here and lie to you guys and say that I was one of the people that watched UFC 1 because I wasn't. You know, I was at that time, I was probably a pro wrestling fan way back in the day. We're talking like the Attitude Era. That was sort of my my peak wrestling days. And then I sort of fell out of love for wrestling, actually. I hadn't really watched it since, you know, the Attitude Era. And then all of a sudden I'm in university and I'm watching The Ultimate Fighter. And I just became engrossed in the UFC and just loved it. And I started watching Pride and everything else. So for me, I sort of became a fan of season one of The Ultimate Fighter. And it sort of just sprung from there. And then as far as me, you know, working in the industry, 2008 would have been the first time because that's when I started working at the Fight Network, which is a 24-hour sports network here in Toronto that covers combat sports. So it sort of just blossomed from there. But it was something that, you know, I was sort of a casual fan, and then I got really into it. And now I'm hooked. So, you know, it is what it is.
So I was researching you for the show, and your credentials are amazing. So, but right now, as you mentioned, you're working with Rogers Media and Sportsnet. So tell us a little bit about what it is that you're doing right now with Rogers.
Absolutely. I'll keep this sort of short because I do have a long list of things that I sort of do right now. So Cole's Notes version, I'm a digital video coordinator by day for Rogers Media. So I manage all the digital content for all the Rogers brands. So POTUS, you'll be familiar with, you know, City TV, FX Canada, all those networks that are in, you know, in Canada, I manage all their digital content. So that's my day job. Not very exciting, to be honest, but, you know, it pays the bills, right? On the side, though, I write for sportsnet.ca. I can use them for going to cover UFC events. I can use them, you know, as an accredited outlet. So I've covered a lot of different events this past year using the Sportsnet brand. And then with MMA Oddsbreaker, I do three different things. I write sort of a daily odds and end article for them. I also edit all of Frank Trigg's videos for the website. And I do my own videos, the Parting Shot one-on-one, like I mentioned off the top. So I do that as well. So it's kind of three things I do for Oddsbreaker. And then finally, of course, Flow Combat. As you know, Flow streams a lot of upcoming events, upcoming regional events. So I get in touch with a lot of the promoters and interview fighters that are going to be on those events. It kind of helps out, you know, with subscribers and things of that nature. And I get to talk to a lot of really cool people on the regional scene in the United States.
James, one of the things that I really enjoy about your YouTube show is that you actually get to view a lot of these people because you're doing your interviews via Skype, et cetera. So it sort of breaks that, that odd, you know, when we do phone interviews, you don't get to see the person, you don't get to, you know, see the smiling face, et cetera. So how did it start with your YouTube channel and interviewing these fighters via Skype?
It's pretty simple, actually. So what happened was when I started doing more work for MMA Oddsbreaker, they initially when I started with Oddsbreaker, they only wanted me to do like an article a week. And then it just sort of I came up with an idea where I was going to interview all the Canadian participants on The Ultimate Fighter, and they loved it. And then ever since then, they were just like, yeah, you know, you can start doing more work for us. And it sort of blossomed from there. And then what ended up happening, because I interviewed a lot of guys in the regional scene, I was getting a lot of people coming at me being like, hey, can you interview this fighter? Can you interview this fighter? And I'll never turn down an interview. You know, I enjoy talking to a lot of the people on the regional scene, because generally they're better interviews. You're not having guys that are, you know, going to be all diva-ish and everything else. So it's usually a really good interview. But anyways, what happened was I was getting a lot of interviews and I was having to transcribe them for the site. And as you guys know, if you've done any transcribing, it is a pain in the ass. It takes forever. And to be honest, my bread and butter is not writing. My bread and butter has always been broadcasting. That's what I went to school for. That's sort of what I've always wanted to become for a full-time gig is a broadcaster. So it sort of transitioned from there where I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do Skype interviews from now on. I saw what Frank Trigg was doing for the site, and I thought I could do the same thing. And so that's sort of what I started doing. And it's been great. The response has been awesome. And the cool thing is, you know, it's not only good exposure for the fighters, especially guys that you've never heard of that you get to see their face, but it's good for me too, because, you know, I'm getting out there and I'm kind of getting to showcase, you know, my sort of broadcasting skills, and, you know, which you will not see if I'm transcribing an interview, right? You can't really see it too well. I sort of discovered early on I'm never going to be Chuck Mendenhall, so I might as well try and be a decent broadcaster instead.
I don't think any of us will ever be Chuck Mendenhall, let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
But I have to agree with Tony. I really enjoy the video aspect of it, and that's something that when we started this, that I would said to Tony, you know, we should look at it because I think it's a very awesome way to do things. But let's go back, let's rewind back in your career a little bit, because not only are you working for Rogers, but you did get the opportunity to work for the other major network in Canada, which is TSN and the Fight Network. So tell us a little bit about that. Did that help you with working with the Fight Network into moving into this job that you have now?
Absolutely, because, you know, I'll tell you something, you know, a lot of people that, you know, are doing their video content and things like that, you know, they have other people editing it for them. And me, I do everything myself, you know, the graphics, yeah, the video and everything else. And that's sort of what I learned when I was at Fight Network. You know, I started there as an editor, I worked my way up to producer, and then I eventually started doing some reporting for them. And basically the reason I left Fight Network, I was there for 4 years. I was there from 2008 till 2011. I was actually there when Mauro Ranallo was there. So, you know, getting, you know, being able to learn from a guy like that early on really sort of helped my career. But I sort of realized that, you know, I was never going to get on air there. You know, they got Robin Black, they got John Pollock, they got John Ramdeen. You know, they've been there forever, and they're still there. So I'm glad I did leave, because, you know, I was able to sort of carve my own craft, so to speak. But I left Fight Network. I went to TSN. I was just doing basically editing for TSN for their website. You know, if you see all the highlights on their page, that's sort of what I was doing. I was doing that for a bit, and then you know, I asked them, you know, on their website, I said, hey, I don't see anyone doing any MMA stuff for you guys, and they're like, yeah, and I'm like, hey, do you guys mind if I started writing some stuff for you guys? And they were like, sure. So I did that. That worked out really well. I actually covered my first UFC event at UFC 165 in Toronto, which, of course, was the Jones and Gustafson fight. What a great card to pick to go cover your first UFC event. And then from there, you know, yeah, and then from there, I actually remotely co-hosted a radio show for TSN as well called The Weigh-In, which is still on in Winnipeg. I did that for a bit, and then I had to leave TSN actually when I got the full-time gig with Rogers because, as you know, conflict of interest, Bell Media owns TSN, Rogers obviously owns Sportsnet, so I had to go over to Sportsnet, and I knew someone over there already, so I said, hey, are you guys cool if I start writing for you guys on the Sportsnet side? And they're like, sure. So I've been doing that since, I think, 2013, and that's basically where I'm at now. But to kind of answer your question, I mean, yeah, everything that I've done to this point is all sort of come from the experiences that I've had, you know, covering events, doing editing, producing, doing interviews. I mean, all that I learned early on, and it sort of paid dividends for me now.
Hey, James, I'd be remiss if I didn't go into, even though I want to learn how you actually started with working for or with Flow Combat. Well, let me ask you that. Actually, I'll do the quick hitter on that. How'd you start working with Flow and Bo?
So I actually, I don't know if many people know this, but Flo actually approached me back in March. I was at UFC 196 for Sportsnet covering the event, and we'd sort of had some preliminary talks about bringing me on board, and, you know, nothing was sort of official yet. And this was right when Jeremy Botter, I think, was named the head of Flo Sports and everything. So, and I didn't know Botter that well, so he wasn't very familiar with me. And so there was, you know, kind of early on, there were some talks there, and then I kind of just waited. You know, my situation with Oddsbreaker is perfect. Like, you know, I do a lot of stuff for them. They're very generous as far as like letting me put up pretty much all of my content. I mean, they never say, hey, we don't want this interview or whatever. They're very good in that sense. And, you know, I get paid for it. So there's definitely some good incentive there too. But it sort of was just, you know, I felt like, you know, I didn't really go out of my way to sort of get in touch with them. They actually got in touch with me. It was sort of closer to July. Dwayne Finley, who I know quite well, you know, I've had him on my show a bunch of times. He reached out to me and just said basically that he was looking for someone to sort of add some video content, and he knew my background and he obviously saw, you know, my show and everything else. So they reached out to me, and I was happy to come on board because it's funny because, you know, I was getting a lot of interviews, and it was kind of getting to the point where, you know, Oddsbreaker could only put up so much content. So it actually was perfect timing because I was kind of looking for another website to sort of outsource more of my interviews because, you know, like you guys see, I do a lot of interviews, you know, so it was good to be able to sort of do that. And yeah, I've been with them since July and things have been great, you know, and it's sort of the same thing talking to a lot of these regional fighters and, you know, really sort of giving them the exposure that they deserve.
Yeah, they have been really great, and they've been really great to us as well, those boys over there at Flow. But before we get into UFC 203, being a Canadian boy and growing up with the Score, I have to ask you about the Score days. I have to ask you about, you know, Tim and Sid and back in those days and Cabby. And I mean, you guys over there at the Score really had something going that I really enjoyed. And when the Score was on, that was the network that I watched. I didn't watch TSN at all when the Score was out. You know, you had Mauro Ranallo, who's the boss, like you just said. And so tell us about the Score days. They were kind of the Wild West days, weren't they?
Yes. Well, actually, the interesting thing was I sort of joined the Score right when they were going through that big transition period. Now, if you remember in 2008, that's when they launched the HD studio and they had the, you know, studio on King Street that had some nice, you know, window background to the city and everything else. So it was a bit of transition because if you remember sort of the Wild West days, that's where they used to have, you know, reporters in every city across Canada and they were remote and everything else. And then about 2008, that's when they sort of shifted and they got the, you know, the hardcore radio station and everything else. So I was only there for like less than a year, but when I was there, I mean, it was a fun place to work. They're definitely very dedicated to what they do as far as all that. But I'll tell you guys something, you know, my first job, like I said, was a script writer and I hated it. I'm not a good writer. I discovered that early on. And that's sort of why I left and I went to Fight Network right after, because it's like, look, like I love sports, but I don't love it as much as I love MMA. So for me, it was just like I had to sort of make that transition and go over to Fight Network, and they were just down the road from each other. So it kind of worked out quite well. But I have nothing but great memories there. You know, I know Cabby quite well because even when I was at the Score, he was also at TSN when I was there as well too. So I've got a chance to speak with him a number of times. But yeah, it was interesting. And I'll tell you one other little tidbit. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Score was actually run by a guy by the name of Anthony Ciccone. And Anthony was the one who had the idea to put the Score, you know, to have the ticker and have, like I said, the different reporters in different cities. And it was about 2008 that he left to go basically save Fight Network. They were in financial trouble, and Anthony went in and headed up Fight Network. And Fight Network is where they are today, I believe, a big part of what Anthony's done. And I think the reason the Score isn't as good as they were is because I think Anthony left. You know, they had some good ideas, and I think that it just didn't work out for them in the long term. I think that if the Score were to focus more on features and not so much on highlights and try and compete with Sportsnet and TSN, I think they'd still be around today. That's just my two cents.
James, let's go into the strange card that was UFC 203. Did you watch – how much of the prelims did you watch? I'm assuming, knowing you, you probably watched them all.
I watched pretty much all the fights except the one I sort of was kind of in and out of was the Jimmy Rivera and Faber fight. And the reason that was is because I had to interview Rick Glenn last night. So it just so happened his schedule didn't work out. So I had to fit him in, and then I sort of went back to the fight. But I sort of read the play-by-play. So pretty much every other fight I watched except for Rivera-Faber, didn't give it my full attention, unfortunately.
By the way, James, every single time I see your name, I want to say lynch mob, right? Because that's never happened.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into Kohea versus I. I thought just me being, and you know, listen, I'm a big Jessica I fan, maybe a bit of a Jessica I apologist. And by the way, I can't tell you how jealous I am that you've interviewed Megan Anderson twice. But I do want to ask you about Jessica I. Just looking at her, something's going on with her. And to me, it seems to be one of those Pettis's mental things. Because, I mean, she's 1-5 now, in 1-5-1 in the UFC, and really hasn't looked good at all, with the exception of the weigh-ins and the maybe the Leslie Smith fight. I don't think she was doing that great there either. What's your take on Jessica I? Do you think it's something mental, or do you think just she's not, her fight IQ isn't where it needs to be?
I think it's a combination of things. You know, she was working with a sports psychologist heading into this fight. So as far as the mental thing, at least she was trying to make an effort as far as, improve that area of her game. But I wonder if it's a bit of just being stale and being at the same camp. You know, at Strong Style, I don't even know of any other female fighters that train there. And it's great that you're training with guys, but I think there is a point where she does need to sort of maybe look at, maybe it's time to move on. You know, I looked at a fighter that, used to train at Strong Style, and Brian Rogers, who went up to Factory X and seemed to have more success when he went out there. And I think some of these fighters just have to make sort of that same call. We've seen other fighters where, you know, things aren't going their way, and you know, a switch up in camp can work wonders. So I wonder if that's a bit of the issue too. But I will say, I did have Jessica I winning this fight. It's unfortunate, you know, being in her hometown, you'd figure she would have got the hometown decision. But nevertheless, she didn't look that great last night. I wonder if her going down to Invicta, maybe getting some spring cleaning, so to speak, like Angela Hill has, I wonder if that's maybe the solution here. But yeah, something's not right with her, and she definitely doesn't look like the fighter that was the Bellator champion.
Now, James, as Tony said leading into this segment about 203, it was the strangest card I think I've ever seen. What story stood out from you? I mean, we started with the whole Ryan Bader and having a problem with the elevator. We moved down to Travis Brown's broken finger, which you touched on, of course, in your show last night. And then almost having a brawl with Edmund. What, over the course of the card, what is your top story?
Yeah, it's tough. There's so much wackiness, I think is the best way to put it, as far as what happened on the card last night. You know, for me, it's got to be, still, it just sort of stands out because it's just one of those things. But I think the kick that Werdum landed on Edmund, I mean, that's one that just, I mean, to be honest, it was very uncharacteristic of Werdum. You know, he seems like a pretty respectful guy. And, I'm the least, Edmund's probably one of my least favorite people in MMA right now. But still, I thought Werdum kind of out of character. And here's the other thing, guys, if Babalu had gotten in the cage there would have been some serious issues with fines and everything else, because that is a big no-no. You can't do that. But I think, unfortunately, you know, Stipe winning the title, I think, will always be sort of the main, caveat from that, because it really was a great way to end the night. But I think, sort of overshadowing that is the video that's going viral of Werdum kicking Edmund.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if it would have been Werdum kicking, like, Rafael Cordero or someone that people like, if that would have been a bigger deal, because I think all across the board, I think sort of Werdum, and again, really odd, right? Because a pretty respectful guy. Seems like people were happy that he kicked Edmund.
Yes, and I wonder how the fine's going to play out, because it seems like a lot of people don't like Edmund and or Travis Brown. I mean, it's one of those things. I think people, when I actually missed it, what happened was I was I think I was tweeting something, and then I caught it on my eye, seeing that this brawl was about to happen, and I saw the replay, and I was like, really? Like, Werdum kicks Edmund? But again, these are two of the most probably hated people in MMA right now, Edmund and Travis Brown. So I think people are sort of on the side of Werdum here. But imagine if this was anyone else. You know, imagine if this was, I don't know, Betch Kohea kicking Jessica I or something. I mean, I think people would be up in arms about this. But I think because it was Edmund, people are sort of being like, eh, he deserved it.
Yeah, can we just stay on that for a second? But what was up with Edmund last night? Like, even in the corner, you know, when Travis in between rounds. What was up with that? I mean, the guy was screaming so much that he lost his voice and sounded like a boy who had not gone through puberty yet because he had lost his voice so much. Like, what is going on in that man's head? Is he a crazy person?
I think the, you know, the Emperor is showing his clothes, so to speak. I mean, at this point, because
right.
I forget, someone posted the records last night of fighters that have competed at Glendale Fight Academy, and, you know, it's just been atrocious. And, you know, you heard some of the corner mm-hmm. advice he was giving Brown last night, saying, if you win this round, you win the fight. Like, come on, man. You have to know that as a coach that your fighter's down and maybe, you know, wants to give him some confidence or whatever. But, I mean, I'd say go for the finish. If you're not winning the fight, don't tell him he just needs to win the round to get it going. I think, really, we're just seeing that Edmund is not that great of a coach. And it's just, yeah, I think, you know, for forever, Ronda Rousey was just sort of, you know, going off of, you know, her skill set and getting wins. But now we're really seeing that, you know what, Edmund's not that great of a coach. And we saw Jake Ellenberger a few weeks ago go back to Kings and look amazing. And I think it speaks volumes to the fact that Edmund and Glendale just isn't the right camp for a lot of people.
Hey,
yeah,
let's go. Sorry, bro.
No, you're fine, Tony.
Let's skip over Faber Rivera, because admittedly, maybe none of us were paying attention to that one, to be frank, James. But let's talk about the Gall Phil Brooks fight. And again, we took some shots, James, saying, you know, with one particular listener saying that we weren't really giving Phil Brooks, CM Punk, the respect. I was. I just didn't think that he belonged in a UFC, you know, main card, to be frank. But I definitely gave him the respect, and really, not knowing wrestling, not seeing him as a wrestler, I actually gained a lot of respect for him as a person. But let's talk about the Gall-Punk fight. What do you think is next for Punk? Because clearly, Brooks didn't look good.
And it sounds like he's not going to be in the UFC. It sounds like Dana White sort of alluded last night that he does not, if he basically said if CM Punk wants to fight again, then it's not going to be in the UFC. I would be willing to bet you're going to see your RFAs, your Titan FCs, your Legacies pitch this guy and get him on their card, because look, they have guys that are 1-0 fighting on their cards anyways on the undercard. If you're a promoter out there, and especially if you've got a TV deal like, you know, Legacy and RFA have Access TV, if you're Titan, you've got UFC Fight Pass, that's big dollar signs. People are going to watch this event just to see him fight. So I would imagine you're going to see a bidding war for CM Punk fighting on one of these cards, and he'll fight some nobody, some guy that we've never heard of on the next card. And I think the UFC will, I mean, if the UFC's smart, they'll get it under one of the Fight Pass banner cards, like a Titan FC, and really, you know, maintain the exposure that they've already used with him.
And that's really where he belongs, right? He doesn't belong in the UFC. He doesn't even belong, you know, fighting on a Fight Pass card. He is an amateur. He should be fighting at the amateur level. But let's move along. Let's move along to the main event, because I thought what a great fight that was. And I was so excited when they were walking down. I mean, you couldn't contain me last night, because I was so excited about what possibly could have happened. And we saw a great fight. You know, Overeem dropped Stipe early in the first. You know, ended up coming back. I don't know what Overeem was doing trying to put on that triangle. If he would have just kept on throwing his hands, that fight probably has a different result. But what do you think? I mean, that place went crazy. So what do you think about, you know, Stipe defending his title?
I mean, this is a signature moment in his career. You know, he wins in his hometown, and he defeats a guy in Alistair Overeem who really could have made history last night, if you think about it, you know, being a former champion of, you know, many organizations and capping it off with the UFC championship. An amazing fight. One of the best first-round fights I think you're ever going to see in MMA. You know, kind of didn't have as much drama as, say, sort of the Andre Arlovsky-Travis Brown fight, but it did have, you know, it certainly, there were moments where you didn't know where this fight was going to go. You mentioned Stipe getting dropped. I was nervous as hell. I thought Overeem had him at that point, and, you know, even when he stood up, Miocic seemed a bit wobbled, but it just was clear to me early on that Miocic was the better striker. And, you know, Overeem, he's really sort of gotten these wins lately by being very calculated, very patient. But I think when you're fighting a guy like Stipe who's aggressive, you can't sort of get away with that. I mean, we saw Overeem run away last night. You know, I don't have any problem with that. I think, you know, you got to watch not getting clipped like where Doom did in his last fight. But it was evident to me that Miocic, if the fight was staying standing, he was going to have the advantage. I was I thought if Overeem had maybe landed those shots more when he had the opportunity, it might be a different outcome. But nevertheless, Stipe is the man right now. And I, you know, it's funny, I got into an argument with someone this morning about, you know, saying that Stipe got two lucky wins. Like, come on, man, give this guy respect. No. You know, two losses in the UFC. The Struve one, you know, I'm sure if they fought today, it would be a much different outcome. And the JDS fight was close. You know, he didn't win the fight, but still mm-hmm. went the distance with him. I think Stipe right now is, you know, on the fast track to being, you know, one of the best ever. He's really shown some great maturity in his career.
James, I got to ask you about this. Dan Hardy brought up the fact that as of tomorrow, as of yesterday, rather, and he didn't, he wasn't sure, but I looking at his fight career, I guess it's confirmed. Alistair Overeem, 10 losses via KO, 2
yep.
via submission, 2 via decision, 10 KOs. Boy, that's a lot when you've had as many fights as he's had. What say you about Overeem's career going forward?
I mean, I'm always the guy who says it's better to get out early than too late. You know, we've seen guys, you know, suffer significant brain damage, you know, that are retired now, and it's not a good sign. Now, as far as what's happening with Overeem here, the thing is he hasn't been knocked out. I mean, this is his first knockout loss, you know, since, I guess, the Rothwell fight, and that was, you know, a few years ago. So it's not like he's, you know, losing all these fights and getting knocked out. It is concerning. I think that's heavyweight MMA for you, though. I think Frank Mir has a similar stat where he's been knocked out a number of times. And, you know, with Overeem, we also have to factor in the kickboxing fights, too, that he's been knocked out in. I believe Badr Hari knocked him out in K1. So, you know, there is some concern. I don't think we'll see much more of Overeem. I think, like Arlovsky, I think he's got a couple fights left. Do a couple big-name fights. I mean, there are some you know, marketable fights out there for him. But, yeah, I think this was it for Overeem. If he wanted his title shot, I think his time has passed. There's too many contenders in that division right now, you know, like Werdum, like Cain Velasquez. And I just think the time has passed. And I think at this point, if he wants to continue his career, get a couple big-name fights, cash out, and then ride off into the sunset.
Okay, James, I know we want to be cognizant of your time, but and I want to ask
oh,
you...
Oh, no worries, guys. I'm good. Whenever, however long you need me. I got plenty of time.
Wonderful. So right now, let's get into the state of Canadian MMA, since we're both Canadian and we have a show that has been announced in December at the Rogers Centre, which I'm super stoked for as well. So what do you think with the Red King... can't stand that name, and Rory McDonald moving over to Bellator, that does leave a void. There's no Canadian big star. And with GSP coming back into the USADA a pool of testing, and we know that works out perfectly for him to make a comeback in December. What do you think about the state of Canadian MMA as it stands now?
Well, yeah, it's tough. I mean, you mentioned it right there. There isn't really any stars at this point. There hasn't been anyone that you can look at and say, this is the next GSP. I mean, they wanted it to be Olivier Obman Mercier, but, you know, he just hasn't shown the results in some of his fights to really suggest that. You look at the guys that they have on the Canadian roster that are in the UFC, it's not really guys that anyone can really stand out. Now, I think a guy like Elias Theodoro has the potential to be very marketable. However, his fight style, not exactly crowd-pleasing at this point, and that's not going to win you over any fans. So I think that GSP's coming back. I think he's going to headline this Toronto card. The reason I think that is the UFC knows that their pay-per-view numbers were absolutely atrocious the last two times they were in Canada. Now, and I was at both those events. So that was the Montreal card. Where I remember looking up in the rafters and they had actually, you know, taped off some sections of you know, just seats that didn't get sold. So it was a very concerning sign there. And then in Vancouver at 174, when Demetrius fought Ali Bagutinov, I mean, you had people walking on the main event. And I think just it's a tough sell. The way I sort of look at Canadian MMA in the UFC is that, you know, we had been riding first class forever. You know, when GSP was here, that we were getting all the good cards. You know, they were, you know, stacking the deck, so to speak. And now that GSP's gone, it's like Canadian fans are put back in coach. They're putting down these watered cards for the pay-per-view events. Now, if this was a fight night card, I'd be fine and say, you know, they're probably just going to do what they did for UFC Ottawa, just put a lot of Canadians on there, maybe a couple, you know, good other fights. But because it's a pay-per-view, I do expect there to be a lot of good names on this card, especially doing it at the ACC, a smaller venue. I would imagine they're going to sort of stack the deck with this one. So I think, you know, I have no reason to believe this, but I just think that the UFC would not have a pay-per-view, not host another pay-per-view with the numbers they've had if they're not going to get a GSP on that card. So I think he fights, and I don't think it matters who he fights because people will watch him compete. That's just the type of guy he is.
James, let's go into you briefly spoke about you just spoke about the state of MMA in Canada, et cetera, and of course Rory McDonald leaving for Bellator. Let's talk about free agency a bit. Do you see anyone else, or do you think actually Bellator's place should be to go after the Canadian fighters such as, you know, Elias Theodoro, who you did say, of course, doesn't have an exciting fight style, but they have to compete and they have to find a niche somehow, some way. What do you think they should do to really get their niche in this industry?
Well, I think with Canada, I think that Rory's – I mean, I'm stoked that Rory's in Bellator because now we're going to get Bellator events hopefully well back in Canada. It definitely sounds like that's the plan.
Yes.
And hopefully not just in Ontario either, because it would be good to see Bellator, you know, go to some of the other markets that really do support MMA quite well, in particular Alberta. I mean, you know, people talk about Canadian MMA being dead. If you go look at the regional scene in Alberta, they're doing shows every couple months, and, you know, they're high-quality matchups. So I think that Bellator's strategy, I think, has always been to get marketable guys. You saw them let go of a guy like Marcin Held a couple weeks ago, which I think was a terrible move, but I get it. It's the Spike model. They want guys that are good on the mic. They want guys that are entertaining. Marcin Held, not great English, not exactly exuding a personality. Now, Rory doesn't either, but the thing with Rory is you're getting the Canadian audience with that as well, too. So as far as free agents go, I think you're going to continue to see Bellator grab guys that are let go from the UFC that have some sort of marketing value, and then they will hit up you know, the odd free agent here and there. But it doesn't seem to me like Bellator is interested in building up fighters, getting any prospects. If you look at the Bjorn Revny era, when they had guys like Michael Chandler and Pat Curran, he really groomed them to be superstars. It doesn't seem like Bellator is really interested in that, you know, unless you're Michael Page, who continues to get easy opponents. But in general, I think you're just going to see Bellator, you know, continue with this model of to try and get ratings and not worry so much about the best talent out there.
Okay, I just want to shift gears a little bit. And another story that stood out to me was Lawler dropping out of 205. And, you know, we saw an interview with Cerrone, and he was talking about that. And I think it was you last night who said that Cerrone actually wanted to fill in and fight on this card. What a crazy dude, mm-hmm. right? So, first of all, let's talk about Lawler dropping out. And the way that he told Cerrone was very, you know, man-to-man. And, you know, you got to give him props for that. So let's talk about that, and then Lawler dropping out, and then tell me about Cerrone and who you want to see him fight at 205, because he says he still wants to be there.
Yeah, first off, credit to Robbie Lawler. I don't think this is being talked about enough. Lawler basically said he needs more time to recover from the knockout loss to Tyron Woodley. Good on him.
Yeah.
How many times do we hear fighters rush back into the cage, get knocked out, you know, really suffer long-term injuries? Good on Lawler for recognizing that, first off. And this is a huge card. I mean, he could have made a big payday with Donald Cerrone, but hey, he said he's not ready. So first off, props to Lawler. As far as Cerrone, he'll be on the card. Who does he fight? I think it's really going to depend what happens with Conor McGregor, because if you've got Conor McGregor fighting Eddie Alvarez, then that takes out the possibility of Cerrone fighting Alvarez. You know, I know Dana said he's not really a fan of the fight of Cowboy and Alvarez, but I mean, Cowboy holds a win over him. I mean, that is something you could sell. As far as possible matchups, you know, I wouldn't mind even a fight like Cowboy and Tim Means, a fight that was supposed to happen before Means, you know, unfairly was you know, accused of performance-enhancing drugs. I think really you can't go wrong with anyone against Cowboy at this point. I think stylistically you want a fight that is going to have, you know, two guys willing to stand and bang. So I think there's a lot of different options for Cowboy there. But, you know, the UFC has to be careful too, because Cowboy's on a winning streak. You can sell that. You want to give him a fight that's actually going to mean something too. So coming off a win over Rick Story, it's tough to say what the options are. And it's also tough to say whether Cowboy wants to fight at welterweight or at 155. But I believe you will see Cowboy on this card.
James, I wanted to ask you this as we're, again, want to be cognizant of your time. But I got to ask you this, my friend. Seahawks? Really?
Yeah, okay. So here's my thing as far as being a sports fan, because a lot of people get confused by this. So I'm born and raised in Vancouver. I'm a diehard Canucks fan. The thing is, when I grew up, all the teams that I supported were either in Vancouver or in Seattle, because, you know, that's the closest city proximity to where I was, you know, where I grew up. So I'm a Mariners fan. I'm not a Jays fan. I support the Jays, but they're not my number one team. Mariners will always be my number one team. Ken Griffey Jr., that was my guy watching when I was growing up. And the Seahawks, same thing. It was, you know, it was always cheering for the team that was closest to you, the same way that fans in Toronto cheer for the Bills. So, yeah, I'm a Seahawks fan. I'll admit here, maybe I was a little bit more excited once they went on their run. You know, call me a bandwagon fan, whatever. I never owned like a Matt Hasselbeck jersey, so I'll put it that way. But, you know, I mean, I support them. I'm a casual football fan at best. I mean, with all the work I do with MMA, hockey and MMA are kind of my two main sports that I try to follow. But even then, it's tough to keep up with both just because there's so much going on. But yes, I'm a Seahawks fan. As you can see in my videos, I got the Seahawks hat in the back. So
yeah, absolutely. So I have a question about your background first, and then I want to ask you an off-topic sports-related conversation.
Anything. Ask me anything, guys. I'm totally game.
So the Route 66 sign that you have in the back, is that from Route 66? Is it official?
You know, I don't know. I got it in high school, and it was from a guy who used to live in Arizona. So I have no idea if it's official, but it certainly looks awesome in my office here. So,
indeed.
I cannot confirm or deny at this point.
Okay, so you, you brought up the Blue Jays, and we'll probably let you go right after this. You brought up the Blue Jays, and you know their situation right now is, you know, they're right at the top of the division, fighting with Boston, and people are just going absolutely crazy in the city. I know I listen to The Fan all the time in my car, so I hear all the crazy people. So let's talk about the Jays. Let's talk about what you think and how they're doing and what their chances are to, well, they're probably going to make the playoffs, but to make it any further than that.
Well, admittingly, I haven't watched a ton of Jays games, and I should mention, too, I live right across the street from the Rogers Center, so I see the craziness of the Jays fans. It's actually pretty cool to see everyone, you know, really into a baseball team and be pretty passionate about it. I mean, you see the Jays everywhere you go. I definitely can appreciate that.
Yeah.
My sort of thoughts on the Jays from the limited stuff I've seen this year is that they have a team that will probably make the playoffs, but it doesn't give me that sense like there was last year that they're really going to go on a big run here. I mean, they have, you know, the heavy hitters. The pitching, I think, still questionable to a certain degree. You know, I'd love it if they went all the way, but I just don't think they have those assets that really will get them over the top. I was disappointed when they didn't even make David Price an offer last year. And granted, I know David Price, you know, didn't exactly exude a lot of good stuff in the playoffs last year. But, you know, Rogers talked all about when they brought in the new owner or the new general manager, they were going to spend some money. They didn't really do that. And, you know, for me, you've got this limited window with, you know, Aaron Encarnacion and Batista. You got to go all in right now. And I feel like they haven't really done that. So I don't know. I think they'll probably get past the first. Maybe they'll get in the playoffs. They might lose in the first round. They might lose in the second round. We'll see. But I'm not predicting a World Series for the Blue Jays. Sorry. Not that.
Hang on, Tony. Before you close, what about Batista? He's not playing very well this year. What do you think that does to his chances of getting what he's asking for?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, anytime you're in a contract year, you have one or two things happen. You either have guys who play really well and really want to get that contract, or you have what's happening to Batista right now where it's just he's not playing up to par. And I think it's probably getting to his head. You know, if I'm a player, I understand you want to cash in on a big contract, but it looks like this is really a distraction for him, and it just doesn't seem like he's playing the type of caliber of baseball you'd expect. So, yeah, it's unfortunate because I think, you know, once he's done, he's not going to get the type of contract he would have expected at the beginning of the season.
Well, gentlemen, I'm pretty sure with all this Toronto talk that
we're boring everyone else.
No, DC may have jumped on that bandwagon too, apparently. So, listen, James, we want to thank you for your time. Honestly, I watching your videos again. I'm super jealous that you've had a chance to chat with Megan Anderson twice, but hopefully you'll allow us to have you back on. We're big fans of your work, and we really love the energy.
First off, thank you so much for having me on, like I said off the top. If you guys want Megan Anderson on your show, talk to me after the show. I'll hook it up. I know her manager quite well, so just going to throw that out there. Your audience can follow me on Twitter at LynchOnSports. They can also check out my YouTube page, youtube.com/LynchOnSports. I do interviews every week, guys, not just with UFC guys, not with Bellator guys, from all over the place. So your audience can definitely check that out. And, man, if you're down in Toronto for UFC 206, give me a shout. We definitely got to grab some beers, man, because I'll be down there covering it. And we'll have to do it off hours because, you know, can't be drunk when I'm reporting, right? So we'll do it off hours. But appreciate you guys having me on, man. It's a lot of fun. Anytime you want me on, I'm game.
Go Seahawks as a Niner fan. And follow, of course, James once again, Lynch on Sports. Thanks, James. Have a great day.
You too, guys. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Thank you.
I like that guy.
I tell you what, these interviews are always fun. Always, you know, these journalists that cover this sport, they're just like us, and they're really cool dudes, man. Really cool.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is we didn't get to talk with Verdum about the Verdum-Brown fight much, but maybe Tyson will allow us to go into that. But it's interesting that of all things, right, we just skipped that, and maybe that's an indication of how the fight was, because – it was a little unusual, right? I mean, Verdum, first off with that, listen, he's a lot more flexible pro than I would ever give him credit for. That's for damn sure.
Oh, for sure.
Because, you know, he has that old man body, probably worse than mine. Well, maybe not, right? Because he's actually a real fighter. I just stayed at a Holiday Inn. But it's interesting to watch him. I'm not sure what Verdum was doing there, bro. It was really unusual, right? And you know what? We have Tyson on. So get Tyson on. To the lot viat we go. Tyson, thanks for joining us at Amp Radio.
Hello, how are you?
doing good, brother. Doing good.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Let's explain real quick. This is Tyson. He's one of my friends, and you know, he runs the Facebook pool that I'm in, which he's dominating. Of course, I'm doing very poorly. you know, Tyson actually is from Canada, moved to Latvia, and is joining us to talk some MMA, which is totally awesome. We covered the I fight, we covered the JoJo on Josh fight. Do you want to touch on either of those two before we move into something else?
To be honest, I have to catch up on some of the undercard fights.
Okay, perfect.
If I want to watch live fights, I have to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So sometimes it depends on the event for me. If it's a serious event, I can do it. But I have a 3-year-old and a wife, so there's like a big compromise there that I have to, you know, make a choice.
Absolutely.
So this one, I haven't seen the undercards anything. I did enjoy the two main events. I won't really touch on Gall versus the CM Punk. I think we all know what happened there. I think we all kind of knew that it was going to happen. Good on him, you know. He was a good sportsman afterwards.
I
think that. You know, like his character really showed, like not just in the fight, but in the lead up and afterwards. I think he seems like a pretty level headed guy. But yeah, we saw that coming.
Right.
The Verdun fight. What'd you guys think of that fight?
Yeah, we were just touching on it. So if you want to give your point of view first, please feel free, and then we'll chat about it after you.
Absolutely. The jumping sidekick to lead off. Where did that come from? Really? Like, Verdum, when he first started in the UFC, this guy had no striking whatsoever. Like, at all.
Yep.
He's, like, a world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You know, I remember he was training his kicks with Krokop and, like, learning some stand-up, and he had nothing. That's when he fought DeSantos and got caught with the uppercut. He had no striking whatsoever. And now he's fighting a guy that's, what, 6'7", you know, like Brown is basically in there because he's a tough guy with some okay striking. And Verdum just really gave him no respect. He's trying spinning heel kicks and these, you know, somersault kicks and just no respect whatsoever. And coming off of a knockout, I think that really shows a lot that, like, you know, maybe he's ready to go back in there and redeem himself. I don't know. Generally, when somebody gets knocked out like he did, they come back a little gun shy, and I didn't see that from Verdum last night. You know, obviously he's not fighting the caliber of guy that Miocic is, but still, it said a lot for sure.
Tyson, there definitely seems to be a bit of a aura of desperation coming from Verdum, and I don't know if it's, like you said, just that loss, obviously losing the belt and losing it the way he did, but he didn't look like himself. You're right, from the kick to all those spinning wannabe Yair Rodriguez stuff, it was really unusual.
It wasn't pretty. You know, it really wasn't. But I don't know if he knows that this is going to draw attention to him, and that the UFC, they want people that are going to draw attention, whether you deserve the shot or not. People are going to pay to see it, you know, and maybe that's what he was going for. I don't really know. Good on Brown for stepping up on short notice, but to be honest, I don't see Brown as one of those top guys in that division.
Right.
I think he's a big, strong, tough guy. He's training with Edmund. James Lynch, I was listening in. Wow, that guy knows his stuff. Wow, good.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
find
him on Twitter like immediately after I get off the call, because he summed it up before I even could. Like, he said that he is the smallest, like not even close to an Edmund fan. I would challenge him. I think I'm even less of an Edmund fan. You know, I don't know. But honestly, like, it was just a strange situation. You mentioned in between rounds how he was screaming and screaming. It reminded me, have you guys seen this movie, I Love You, Man, from like 2008 or something? And there's one character and his voice always cracks and he's saying, everything you got, everything you got. And that's what Edmund was doing in the corner there. It was just pure desperation. And for like this elite level boxing coach that he's supposed to be, Brown, he's got no jab. Like, He's definitely got the reach advantage over Verdum, but he wasn't using a jab at all to keep Verdum away, and it seemed like Verdum kind of did whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, kind of thing, which good on Verdum. No, I'm not really sure what happened at the end there. I don't know if we know what Edmund said, or I don't know.
Right.
It seemed like it got a little out of control there. But I was impressed with Verdum. I don't know if he's ready for the rematch yet. The Kane's definitely still in the picture, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me just weigh in on the fight before we move on to that. The kick that he came out with to start off the fight, if he would have landed that flush, that fight would have been over, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, he's not giving what 6'7" Travis Brown any respect there at all. Now, those kicks that he was throwing, the weird Yair Rodriguez kicks, some of them did land. I mean, he hit Travis Brown a couple of times in the back with a couple of those, and I was thinking to myself, shit, those must have hurt, man. They cannot feel good. But one, just because we were saying how odd this card was and how strange some of the things that happened were, and a lot of the strange things happened in and around this fight. First of all, Travis Brown's finger gets broken, and from what I've been hearing,
yeah,
is that his finger was actually poking through the skin. So first off, that fight, one, should have been stopped. First of all, when Brown decided that he's going to call timeout in the middle of a cage fight, and the ref gives it to him. Can you believe it? The ref stops the fight, right? Ridiculous. I don't know if he just had a brain fart or...
That was absolutely insane.
Right?
Well, your first time watching, you probably didn't catch what happened. Neither did I. I was like, okay, well, what happened here? Like, the ref stopping? Because clearly Verdum sat back for a second and he said, okay, well, I'm going to get him. Because the ref didn't jump in. I watched it a couple times. And it's actually the second time I've ever seen a timeout in MMA. And once upon a time, Hamilton Zone, you're from Brantford, Ontario, Jeff Joslin was fighting John Fitch in TKO back in the day. I think it was called TKO once upon a time. Anyway, and he was clearly up. Clearly up. And he had Fitch in big trouble. And Fitch's corner, Tito Ortiz was actually in Fitch's corner. They called a timeout, and the ref came in, and they were checking Fitch's face, inside his lip. Are you okay? In the meantime, Jocelyn's looking around like, what's happening here? You know. And then they actually gifted Fitch the decision. If you ever get a chance, watch that fight. It's one of the biggest disappointments ever. But that's the only times I've ever seen timeouts, and you can't do that. That's not how it works. Come on.
It's definitely not part of the rules. And it was just such a weird thing because every time the doctor came over to check the finger, Edmund's just like, no, it's fine. And they were just hiding it. But clearly he wasn't fine. I mean, he didn't throw that hand until late in the third. He started throwing it again just because he knew he was down. Tony?
Tyson, question for you. So you obviously got to see the Phil Brooks, CM Punk, Mickey Gall fight. What was your take on that?
Well, he was in over his head, of course. You know, there's only so much you could do. I was a little shocked by how much he was in over his head because he's not coming from a joke camp. Like, Duke Rufus spent 2 years with him. And I was kind of expecting, you know what? I don't think it's going to happen, but maybe this guy's going to come out and shock the world because I didn't think Rufus would put him out there, you know, on his name, and it might have been a fluke. Maybe he's a lot better than what we saw there. There must have been something happening in the gym that Duke Rufus was like, okay, it's time. Because Rufus, like, come on, I grew up watching him kickboxing in, like, the 80s, you know? Like, he's a legend of kickboxing. And he's got the Pettis brothers, you know? He's got people in his gym. I think Askren is there as well. He's got real people there. So I don't know. It wasn't pretty the way he walked into that takedown and then couldn't get out of it. Like, that's for sure.
I mentioned when James was on that, you know, he's an amateur. He should have started as an... Could you imagine if he actually fought when he was supposed to fight? Right? Well, I mean, this fight had been delayed. I think it's a total of 18 months since he had been signed. could you imagine if he tried to do anything earlier? Like, I know he had back surgery.
No.
That kind of slowed it down. But, man, he would have gotten even more thrashed. Go ahead, Tyson.
It would have been bad for the sport if he walked out there and that
right.
happened to him. Yeah, it really would have been, for sure.
Yeah, I think it would
have. We also saw James Toney, who, given, did come from a
right.
boxing background. He walked in 0-0, and they're like, fine, here's Randy Couture. And,
yeah.
you know, the same thing happened to him. But given he was coming from, like, at least a professional martial art boxing background, you know, this was different. I don't know what to say about Mickey Gall yet. I think it's too soon. I
right.
think that if he does the Northcutt fight that he's asking for, if Northcutt can prevent the takedowns, he's going to eat all for breakfast, I think. You know, I'm not really a Northcutt fan either. I just, Mickey Gall, he's still pretty green, 3 fights.
Right. Well, if you listen to anything that Jim Miller has to say about Mickey Gall, he has nothing but glowing remarks to say about it. I mean, this kid is not new. He's been training since he was a teenager, and the reason that he went for the takedown, Gall was saying, is because Punk came in so hot and heavy. You know what I mean? He just came out firing, and Gall just said, fine, I'll take you down. You've got no defense. I mean, you've overextended yourself. Boom, I'm going to take you down, and that'll be it. And that's exactly what happened. It was embarrassing, to say the least. And like you said at the beginning, Tyson, Punk did redeem himself. I mean, the only thing that I had a problem with was at the weigh-ins, at the cosmetic weigh-ins, let's call them, the fashion show.
Yeah.
When he refused to shake Mickey Gall's hand. I mean, they shook hands the day before, and then he was, like, playing a character. And I thought to myself, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You're going to enrage this young man who has more fights than you. I mean, he does. Even though he had 2 fights, he's definitely got more experience inside the cage. So that's the only thing I had a problem with. And in his post-fight speech at the press conference, so to speak, I don't know why they're running the press conferences such so weirdly nowadays. That's a subject for another day. But he was really, you know, down to earth and modest about what had happened, and he gave a lot of good advice. You know, he wanted to do something, and he didn't let anybody tell him that he couldn't do it. So props there, but I didn't have anything for it. And if you listen to our Smack My Picks Up show, you heard me say that exact same thing. You know, it was just going to be a dusting, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, you and I, we were both talking about it because we didn't think that he was going to make weight. You know, I watched an interview with him and Ariel Helwani, and Ariel was asking him, what do you weigh right now? And he didn't seem confident. He said, how's the weight cutting going? Didn't seem confident. And he asked, have you brought in professionals? He's like, no, I don't need professionals. It's pretty much common sense. First thing I did was message you and say, he's not going to make weight. And sure enough, he did. Good on him. But, sorry, continue.
It's funny how good he looked. It's funny how good he looked when he weighed in, as opposed to the night before at the press conference. He looked completely different. So I don't know if he got to a certain point and then was able to rehydrate a little bit. It kind of shocked me because at the press conference, his clothes didn't even seem to fit him. They were like ill-fitting, you know what I mean? Like you said, was he going to make weight? He looked like Skeletor. He did.
Yeah. Well, he said that the last time he weighed 170 pounds was when he was in 8th grade, so he knew it was going to be a tough cut for sure. The main event. What did you guys think of the main event? I'm sorry?
Do you want to,
once again?
Do you want to lead off, Tony? Go ahead.
No. I just wanted to ask Tyson. So I think we talk about how bad, and Tyson led into this just a bit, about how bad CM Punk looked, but maybe it's an indication, like Tyson was saying, of how good Mickey Gall is. Because what if CM Punk would have fought Mike Jackson? I think we might have seen a different fight, and maybe a more competitive fight.
True.
At least it would have gone more than a couple minutes. Yeah, so let's go into Overeem versus Stipe, and clearly Overeem getting knocked out for the 10th time. Any concern on that for you, Tyson, or what do you think the future holds for Overeem?
Oh, yeah, it's a tough one. I think James, your past guest here, I think he said it's better to see people walk away than have to be dragged away, you know. Overeem, he's been knocked out a lot, man. It's not just MMA, it's kickboxing as well. I remember when he was a 205er, some of the most vicious knockouts, like Chuck Liddell knocked him out badly, Shogun knocked him out. Oh, Jesus, that was horrible to watch. I think they're exciting fights, you know. Either he's going to knock the guy out or he's going to get knocked out. But you got to start to wonder about what's, you know, he's getting his brain rattled pretty good there. Because he was out, you know, and he took like 3 hours after he was out.
Let's talk about that for a second, Tyson, if you don't mind. I know I'm jumping to the end of the fight, but when Joe Rogan was interviewing him, and I wanted to ask James about this too. I mean, he brought up a phantom tap that didn't happen, and Joe Rogan has gone on record saying that he went to the UFC brass after that and said, listen, we cannot continue to interview fighters that have been TKO'd or KO'd like that because they've got a concussion. They don't know what is going on. And talk about embarrassing and weird things of the night. That's another thing that happened. It was completely strange. Did you see that, Tyson?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't know that Rogan went and said that. That's actually really good because I've considered it myself. I've thought about, they always get the fighters to break down, okay, what did you do here? And what did you do there? And some of them are amazing at it. And I'm always like, wow, how do they remember like what they did? Because they're just acting on impulse. The real fighters, they're not thinking. They're just, now I kick, now I, you know, it's just pure impulse. So like to remember in the second round, this is what I did is actually quite amazing. But to get a guy that just got scooped up off the, you know, off the canvas and say, tell us about what just happened to you. That could lead to some terrible moments in television history for sure.
Well, Tyson, speaking of terrible moments in television history, one thing that a lot of people, I'm curious, aren't speaking about is Stipe. During that post-fight interview with Rogan, Stipe was talking about how he got kicked by Overeem, and I think he was concussed too because he was clearly punched.
Yeah.
But he was talking about, would you want to get kicked? I mean, I think he was out of it too.
Yeah, he didn't know what hit him. He had no idea. And that's probably the same thing. He said that, you know, it didn't really hurt me. I just got sat down. But no. Come on. His body went limp for a second before he hit the canvas. Like, I watched it like 4 or 5 times here. He got shut off for like a split second. And luckily, he caught his composure, really. But I imagine he doesn't remember much of the fight either.
Probably not. And I said this to James Lynch as well when we had him on earlier, is that if Overeem continues to strike when Stipe is down, he probably wins this fight. But what saved Stipe is that he decided to go for a choke. I thought that was a huge mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been reading that, and I don't disagree. But the thing is that Overeem, he's actually a jiu-jitsu guy. We kind of forget that with like his K-1 championship, stuff like that. But originally, he was like a decent kickboxer with good jiu-jitsu. Most of his wins were submission. And then like he put on a massive amount of weight, like the horse meat or whatever you want to call it. And now he's knocking all kinds of people out. Like, you know, so I think he's kind of abandoned his jiu-jitsu. Whereas I think he could protect his brain a little bit because he could easily grab a hold of a guy and throw him down. Like, there's no question. He's a big guy that could get the takedown. If he went back to his jiu-jitsu a little bit, I think that he would do better than he is right now. Don't get me wrong. He's been on a win streak. He's been knocking guys out. I think it would be safer for him mentally to go back to the jiu-jitsu roots a little bit and not stand and bang with, what's Miocic? He's like Golden Gloves champion or something like that. He's got some really good boxing. You know, we saw it in the JDS fight. They're going back and forth, and JDS is one of the best heavyweight boxers ever in MMA. And that was a really close fight. It's, you know, standing up with those guys, that's not a smart move at all. I think he could have played it better, in my opinion.
Tyson, so Latvia is obviously borders Estonia, which has loads of beautiful women, and Lithuania. What's the local MMA scene like in Latvia? Or is there one?
It's not so existent. Not really. They do have, like, little tiny promotions, but Lithuania is actually bigger into MMA than Latvia. Yes, we do have the beautiful women, for sure. But they actually they had a semi-famous Lithuanian fighter. I didn't live here at the time, but he fought in Dream. He was actually the Dream champion. He fought Nick Diaz in Strikeforce, Marius Zaromskis. Yeah, he's. I don't know if he's still on the Bellator roster, but he was for a bit. And he had some record at the time that he knocked out three guys in, like, three consecutive fights with head kicks, each within, like, 2 minutes. And he was knocking out real guys, like Maha Sakurai and these guys from Japan and stuff like that. But they have more of the MMA background. But even so, like, MMA is not so big here. In Eastern Europe, we have a couple BJJ schools in Latvia. Poland is actually huge into BJJ. I don't know if you guys know this. It's massive.
Yep.
That's why the sudden influx of Polish fighters are coming to the UFC. You're going to see more and more and more. Because Brazil, of course, has the most Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts. Then France, and then Poland, which is pretty random. But they actually have tons of BJJ schools. Here we have good Sambo. And Sambo is, in my opinion, Sambo actually arms you the best to transition to MMA. If you take jiu-jitsu forever, eventually you need to learn how to strike. If you're a kickboxer, you need to learn the ground game. Sambo is MMA, but with, like, a kimono and gloves. That's where you see, like, Nurmagomedov, I can't say his name, you know, Khabib.
Right.
You know, these guys, Rustam Khabilov, you know, Fedor Emelianenko, they're all coming from a Sambo background growing up, basically doing MMA with, like, you know, sometimes headgear or kimono. Yeah. But so, MMA scene's not big here at all, really.
So it's you mentioned beautiful women.
People. Yes.
Tony, you mentioned beautiful women, and Tyson would know all about that. and you know what Tyson told me one time when he came back to Canada before he went back to Latvia? He said that women in Latvia are 3-1 to men. There are 3 women for every 1 man. So, boys and girls, if you're ever looking for a wife, Lafayette's the place to go. But, Tyson, you were talking about fighters fighting with impulse, and that jogged something in my brain that Cowboy Cerrone brought up on the Joe Rogan podcast. Well, actually, Joe Rogan brought it up about the Cowboy versus Rick Story fight, and he mentioned that that beautiful combo that he laid on Story was just impulse. You know, it was just as he moved through. And but again, he set those shots up beautifully, and it, like Joe Rogan said, it was like he was in the Matrix. So let's talk about that. You know, what an impressive showing. And let's talk about Cowboy and how, you know, great he looks at 170.
Yeah, he wasn't a small 155er for sure, but I wouldn't have thought that he'd hold his own as well as he has in 170. His Story is no joke, you know. Story, he's a good fighter, and that combo, cool. Actually, a couple of my friends and I, we were talking about, have you seen a better combo in MMA? And the only one I could pull up was Nate Marquardt versus, oh, who is he fighting? He threw like a 16 strike combo with like spinning everything and stuff like that, and that's the only one I could think of. I can't think of the guy's name right now. But no, that was great. And that's Cowboy sitting in the gym, hitting those mitts over and over again until his brain, he's not even thinking anymore. He's just, you know, muscle memory and reflex and stuff like that. And it just happened to land. And we're going to be looking back on that combo for the next few years, remembering that one for sure. It was nice. I don't know. Him and Lawler, though? Whew, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, that fight is off. So
it is.
Yeah,
it surprised me even when they announced it. Yeah, I was thinking, like, ooh, a little too soon. Maybe not. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Cowboy,
well, I know Robbie was.
Sorry, guys. Go ahead.
Tony.
Tyson, sorry. So going back into, obviously, a Canadian moving to Latvia, what's the food scene like over there in Latvia?
It's pretty simple stuff. Like, It's funny, whenever I'm talking to my friends, I tell them that it's not like this huge transition period, because it's basically like meat and potatoes, a lot of pork, a lot of chicken, like regular food. If you came to Latvia tomorrow and you ate, it's not like if you moved to Latvia, it's not like if you moved to Mexico. If you move to Mexico, you're going to have diarrhea for like 3 months, you know, you're going to have to take some sort of pills to cope with the situation. No, it's a really easy adjustment. But generally the meat that we eat, it's a little closer to the farm. It's not so much you go to the grocery store and there's all kinds of preservatives and stuff like that. It I imagine it's a little bit healthier because we can buy it right from the market, right from the butchers. It's super common here.
Yeah, and if you take a look at any pictures that Tyson posts on his Facebook, I mean, these guys are out there barbecuing, drinking gigantic beers every weekend, so they know how to do it out there in Latvia. So I've got one last thing for you. You didn't really answer what's next for Cowboy. I mean, he says he still wants to fight at 205 UFC 205 in New York. Who do you give him? Do you give him Eddie Alvarez? Is that the fight? Does he go back to 155 and fight for the title, or do you give him anybody else? He says he's willing to fight anybody. So who would you give him?
It's kind of a toss-up in my mind, because I am a fan of, like, the tournament bracket, you know, that we see in all of the sports, basically. I'm not a fan of, you know, the Alvarez fight. I get it. He has a win over Alvarez, but does it make sense at this, you know, at this time? It definitely makes way more sense than McGregor getting Alvarez, for sure, you know, but I'm not a big fan of these fights that are here. This will make the fans happy, you know. Meanwhile, the number one contender is sitting there thinking, you know, what the hell just happened? I'd prefer to see him work his way up. How many wins does he have at welterweight? Three? Three wins,
I think. We're down three. Yeah.
Something like that. I would start feeding him, like, okay, Story probably wasn't in the top 10. I don't know off the top of my head, but I can't imagine he was. I'd give him, like, the number 8 or number 7 guy, whoever's free on there. I'm not sure who that is. But I would try and weed him into, like, the actual rankings. But I know that that's not how they do things. That's just, you know, if you want an exciting fight for Cowboy, give him somebody that's going to stand up. They're not going to try and take him down. And if they do, he might submit them anyway. But he wants to stand and bang. Give him somebody else that wants to stand and bang. Ellenberger. Ellenberger's coming off a good win. Ellenberger wants to stand and bang. He's got some power. You know, he wants to, you know, get a good win under his belt after his last fight there. Maybe that's an option. Maybe it's too soon for Ellenberger. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, his takeout down defense has looked greatly improved. And I referenced the Joe Rogan podcast interview with him, and he's saying that due to his takedown defense being so improved, he feels more confident in his hands, and that cannot lead to anything but a more impressive Cowboy, which is pretty next to near impossible. But having said that, Tyson, we are looking to close out the show. I wanted to thank you very much for your time. Please feel free on these Sunday shows, if we have space for you, please. It was great talking MMA with you. You're a very educated person. And if you've got anything that you want to push, your Twitter or Facebook, whatever, please do that now.
No, nothing to push at all. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Oh, man,
all
we
right,
wanted
Tyson,
to follow
thanks
you
very
on
much.
Twitter.
Yeah.
No, I don't really do Twitter. I have like 14 followers, and it's like my grandmother and my aunt. I don't really do that sort of thing. I honestly, Matt, you know, he said that he has a podcast, and I said, you know what, I love to talk MMA. I'm in a part of the world where nobody, I say MMA, they have no idea what that is. I could sit here and talk to you guys for days. So just the opportunity to sit and chat with people that know what they were talking about, that's enough for me. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, we
appreciate it.
Time. And if you want followers, start posting pictures of Latvian women and Estonian women, and you'll get a ton of followers.
Just Tony will be right there. He'll be your first follower.
All right, guys. Thank you very much.
All right, Tyson. Thank you. Have a good night.
Take care. You too. Thanks.
That's right. It's nighttime over there, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He's at least 7 hours ahead of me. So that's like 10 hours ahead of you. So Yeah.
I felt bad for James Lynch, who apparently is up all night. Good Lord. These people, I don't know how they do it, where they, even Morgan and Cold Coffee, how they stay up and do that podcast, and then they're gone. But, yeah, let's close shop, shall we?
Sure. Well, just to touch on that, I mean, Cold Coffee and Morgan started that podcast at 6 o'clock in the morning. I got up an hour later, so I feel their pain.
You and I both, right? Because I'm
happy
there. I mean, I'm getting up at 6. Well, you're
and I was already bothering you. Yeah. I was already bothering you this morning.
I was up at 6 o'clock with dealing with the dogs. So, shout out to my golden retriever and my chocolate lab, right? Shout out to my wife, who endures me being in the office for 6 hours every Sunday. But
how did your anniversary go? Good times?
Yeah, you know what? It's like I said this before. Gosh, it's been 18 years, and it doesn't even feel like it. It really doesn't. I mean, we've been together 23 years. So we've been together.
Wow.
Since we were kids, really. So it's Hey, listen. When you find the one, you know it's the one.
Right.
Unless her name is Misha T. Thank you. All right. So let's get out of here. Follow Pro at PROADOS. Follow James Lynch. Thank you, James Lynch, at Lynch on Sports. Thanks to Tyson, who won't show us any pictures of Latvian women. Thank you, Tyson. Follow me. You guys know I need it. At I'm DJ Tony. I'm going to give you the Twitter follow of the week for me, guys. And I gave this before, but now she's on my mind. Follow Megan Anderson at Megan_MMA. What do you got, Proteus?
Yeah, I had one on mind earlier today because I knew you were going to ask me, and I've totally forgotten about it. but yeah, if I keep giving you all my Twitter follows, I'm not going to have any more anymore. Here we go. Here's one for you. At Justin Scard, I don't think I've given this one before. He's a blogger, and he does a lot of Disney stuff, and I'm kind of a Disney freak, so follow him if you're into it. I mean, he's a little bit strange, but that's okay to be strange, right, nowadays?
That's right. Even if you're a Seahawks fan living in Toronto.
that's correct.
We'll see you next week. I'm working on the guests as we speak. Of course, on every day, the MMA Minute is on. On Wednesdays, we not only will have a pick show, but of course, a call-in show. Thursday nights, Proteus is prime time. And, is that all we got, Proteus?
That's all we got for right now, yep.
All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us. And like that,
I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.